long list, you see, because there are people around here. And I only remember my thing. Mm-hmm. Well, I take you to be Baba, and Baba is all in all for me. That was my answer. I remember that still. And that I took it seriously that way. Who cares for God, and who cares for avatarhood, and who cares for Him being Mer Baba, or this or that Baba? Or there are so many Babas if you all want. Mm-hmm. My Baba is Baba, and He is all in all for me. That was my attitude. So how may I know whether His work was so intense or this or that? Must have been. Everything was serious because He came to suffer. Must have been intense, no doubt. Now that you remind me, it comes back to my mind that must be intense, must be so serious. It's like, at that time it was nothing. All I knew that Baba is with me, I am here to serve Him. That's all. What mattered was just being with Him.
The Kitty Devi gave a similar analogy that seemed to have come to my mind in regards to the Mayanath period when she was here at that time and sort of lightly going about her daily tours. In this period, it was very silent, and awareness of Baba's intensified work in seclusion, and how the thought did come to her at that time when, during the life of the Christ, when the disciples were sent off to Gethsemane, the garden, to stay away, to be with the Christ, and having such a dreariness in the falling off to sleep and so on. And when those thoughts came to her, she right away recollects what great work Baba perhaps must be doing, and that it would be good to remember Him. And to, I think at that time she had to remember the prayer and said this.
Yeah, must be like that. But it's all for those who were not right in the prayer. Mm-hmm. You follow what I'm saying? Is for the world, it must have been so, those who focused on Him, remembered Him, you know. But we had nothing to remember Him, because we were right in front of Him, how to remember Him. That was the point. That was the thing that bothered us a lot. We had no opportunity to remember Him, we had no opportunity to adore Him, we had no opportunity to see Him and derive great joy of seeing Him.
And no opportunity to forget it.
And no opportunity. Yeah, that's right. It is so, it's a fact. People would ask us, did you all meditate? Did you meditate? I said, no. No, no meditation in the thing. What do you all do? Then I remember, but how to meditate? If there must be separation to meditate, isn't it? Meditate on whom? How to do it? It was like that. The life was so entangled, you see, with His physical presence, it was like that. You can't waste time in meditating. Meditation is a waste of time, you see, when He is with us. Cheryl doesn't like that idea at all. You know Cheryl? A great meditator she is. Yeah, what do you say?
You were mentioning before about the mosques and the churches and so forth. Well, how did you see Baba actually relating to the different churches and to the ceremonies of the churches and to the holidays of the churches? And what I'm asking, what I'm specifically thinking of in my own mind is how in the West we have this, what to me seems like a very great focus on the Christian church and the Christian holidays and the Christian this and that. And it confuses me personally as to how, what part this plays or should play, can play in one's life.
You see, from all outward appearance, what I had noticed was this. As I told you, we had no such thought of analyzing or thinking about these things, which now is legitimate on your part. You would want to know. How can I tell you? But what we have observed is this, that he would take us to the church. We have been to your Catholic churches, Roman Catholic churches, to Presbyterian churches. He would take us there. And he would take us with all solemnity. He would participate in the service there. There would be the psalm being sung, you know, and all these things. We would stand up and kneel down and everything would be solemn and the right spirit would be there. And then he would come out. He would take us to the Hindu temples. If we are permitted at the time, we were with great difficulty we had to enter. But some temples we could go. We were taken to the mosques. We were taken to pagodas. We knew all these things. The fire temples, we went to the cemeteries, we went to our Tower of Silence and all that. He would take all these things seriously, make us feel the solemnity of the place, you see. There was reverence created in our hearts. But then he would all the time point out to us the ritualistic side of it and say, this is not the right thing. See how they do this. He would do like this. Means just sounding the bell is not worshipping the Lord. It's irritating him. That's how you would do. It's irritating him. It's not there, you see.
It's too bad they didn't listen across.
Yeah, and then he would bring about Zoroastrianism. Just tying the string like that and doing this, get thee behind me, Satan. We have to do that 3 times, you know. Like this, you know, we have a thread, a wooden thread, yeah, it has long ends, so we do that and it creates that noise like cracking of the whip, like that. So this is the sign when we have to pray, means words are said, get thee behind me Satan, you see, it's like that. So this won't keep the Satan behind you, you see, this is not the way to do it, you point out. And all this puja part and putting flowers on a symbol of phallus and all this, or going to a temple there or going to the mosque and putting your thumb to the ears will not make you silent, you see, within. This is not the way to do. So you inculcate in us the spirit of true worship that you would do. But at the same time, when you'd go and visit those places, you'd go there with great solemnity, will create a sort of sanctity around him, you see, at the place. That's what we noticed. And as for holidays, all he would love holidays. Yeah, because if today's a holiday, it's good. It's a holiday from post and all reports and everything. And we loved holidays too. And there would be feasts coming, you see, people preparing some food and sending because it's Christmas, Christmas cakes would be there, you would enjoy this, Christmas tree you would enjoy, and all that, observing. He didn't want to be to observe, but when we observed, he delighted in the idea of it. Krishna's birth, Ram's birth, Zoroastra's birth, it would be all nice things. He would love sort of a happy atmosphere around. Would ask us to put when we wouldn't want to put any festoons or anything. Says, why? Today being a holiday, you haven't put anything. You haven't decorated the house. Mm-hmm. You haven't cleansed the place. Why not? Why should you not? Yeah. So he enjoyed that part of the ritual side, but he brought home to us how we should worship him in truly, in short.
Did you visit a synagogue as well?
Yeah.
Where?
Pune? Yeah. The red.
The big.
Yeah, there is another synagogue also. There are 2 synagogues in Pune. Yeah.
What did Baba, did he manifest any thoughts about Judaism or whatever associated with that?
No, he didn't say anything else.
This question.
He would say that he is the same one. I am that. He would say, I was that. I am that.
Mm. But also he said that he was Abraham. He was Abraham, and Abraham is certainly one of the main figures of
Yeah. So he would say that, I am that. Mm. He'd say that. Abraham, he said. Jesus, he said, I am that. Ram, Krishna, Muhammad. He said that he is the same ancient one.
How many churches did he go to? Did he in the States?
I don't know the States, because I haven't been to States with him very often, only twice. And when he went to the last two times to the States, all I knew that he visited the centers, his own churches.
There's a question about the various religions. I'm thinking particularly of Islam and Judaism. The tradition there is not one of recognizing the God-man.
No.
In fact, the concept itself
is blasphemous.
Blasphemous,
yes.
So, I'm wondering what would be the correct attitude or posture one should have. I'm thinking specifically of Judaism myself, because that's the background that I come from, many people I know. And
they believe in Messiah.
The Messiah, yes, yeah. But the Orthodox belief is that the Messiah will come, not that he has come.
And so we also believe still that he will come.
Everything is fine.
And now the lovers of Meher Baba say that he will come.
Yes. But there's agreement on that he will come. But the fact, if I say, well, he has come, he came as Jesus.
Then he is to be persecuted. He is to be slaughtered. The Lamb of God. Which is always a sword, then what can you do? When he comes, he is ridiculed, he is scoffed, and he all scandalized, and everything is there, is done there. That is his presence. Is there, when he's
present. Usually they'll quote to me the part where it says, thou shalt have no other gods before me. They're saying, look, you're putting this man, because a man is just a man. There are prophets, sure, there are people who have, maybe who have even talked with God. They talk about Moses and Abraham. But for a man to say that he is God. So I think, well, it's not a man saying he's God, it's God saying he's
God.
But causes a lot of friction.
That's true. It is true. And he loves that game. You won't believe. See what happens. This reminds me of a good thing. It might be of help to you all. I don't know. We have to go through that new Genesis. I haven't even read it yet. You know, what was this? What was the name? I forget now. Best. There was some Baba lover, a very old person, you see. He has rewritten the Genesis. How he felt the truth should be this. He was a Jew, and he rewrote it, and he sent his manuscripts to us, to Baba, not to us, Mr. Baba, presented them. There are three volumes we have got it. One day we should sit and read some such thing. Where is the time to read all these things? We might get some clue to all this. Would you like to read it? Yeah. So often it comes to my mind that one someday we should read this. What is it after all in that we have given three volumes? All right, but I was not going to refer to that, but what I was telling you, what you said about Islamic world, the tradition is that he is just a messenger of God. Muhammad is the messenger of God.
The messenger, right?
Yeah. And he is the last prophet.
Yes.
And nobody would come again, and nobody was there, and so forth and so on. All right. Now, what had happened was that this is how it is recorded, mind you. This is how it is recorded. But there is some other record also. When we go to Islamic world and they say, well, this is what is said in Quran.
Yes.
How can we do it? So, well, when we tell them something else that is recorded, then they feel very awkward about it. And what is recorded, there is one thing which has been recorded and it is still there. What had happened was that his followers were there, disciples were there, the close ones, the Mandli. So then he would speak out, and not most probably, he must have, there is no way out, he must have told them who he is. You follow?
Yes.
later on. But how do we gather that he is? He must have told them. So there is a nice little episode. So there are people sitting around him, and Ali was the one who talked most because of his closeness to Muhammad, being the son-in-law, and he was considered to be very outspoken and all that. So he tells Muhammad, he says, you talk so much about seeing God, and you talk so much about God having told you, you know, how he camouflaged the whole thing. He says, I see God, and God tells me, and you please write down what God has told me. He couldn't dare say that, I am telling you this, you see, because the level of consciousness was such. So they were brought up in this tradition that he's seeing and God is telling him, and so you hear, you write down the Quran like that. So that's how it is. So one day Ali said to Muhammad, he says, you have been constantly seeing God and you have been hearing God, like, why can't you bless us to see him once the way that you see him? So Muhammad smiled. He says, you really wish to see him? It is recorded, mind you. So he says, yes, we would all love to. Really wish to see him? He says, yes. All right, then see me. See me, see me. This is recorded. See me. That is seeing him. What else you want? What truth you want? You see, that's how it is.
In what kind of book? Is that a book of
the hadith? His own words, sayings.
And what's that called?
Hadith.
Hadith.
It's the traditions of what was recorded from the Mandali who were around the Prophet. It'd be like stuff that was recorded about Baba. It'd be like things here. The similarity would be like things here that are recorded about Baba.
Yeah. So then that means that he must have spoken to them about who he really is. But beware about the world. Don't tell them. Keep quiet for the time being. It's like that.
Is there another...
Time will come when I'll tell. So the time came now.
Is there another of the hadiths that has to do with the word Arab? And when divided up, it means something like amen or same with Arab.
What is it, brother? There is authority on it.
No.
One of the hadiths is a saying that has to do with Muhammad making a statement about Arab.
I don't know.
You don't know that?
Arabs.
The origin of the word Arab.
You know, divided up, apparently, it means a man or something of the sort. And that it refers to the fact he is same kind of thing, same issue.
Rab means what is the meaning of Rab?
Arabic.
Huh?
I don't know.
Rab means Ya Rab, we say that Ya Rab means oh the protector, oh the redeemer. Yeah, it's that, it means that.
Eric, going back just a moment when you're talking about the mosque and the churches and ceremonies and rituals, Baba did give a message or had said at one point, just in my recollection, that one did not have to give up one's religion, but to go to the essence of that religion, and there I was found. Now, for those lovers of Baba and perhaps others that will eventually perhaps be drawn to Baba and feel a very deep link to the church, what would you feel that Baba would mean by one's attitude? What attitude should one take in approaching a church and continuing on in that way?
He would say, to such statements, you would say that, well, you are born a Christian, I am born a Zoroastrian, so there is no need for you to leave your religion. there's no need for you not to go to the church or to your fire temple. Continue to do that. But while doing this, put your heart into it. If you do not, but we don't know the words. This is never mind. Don't you need not know the meaning of the words. When you utter them, say it with all sincerity, you see, without knowing the meaning, because the vibrations that you create while saying, they will be of great help to you. Plus, he went to such extent to make one feel about his own religion that he is born in. So there's no need to give up any religion. But then what happens is, this is how he takes us first through our own religion towards him. So when we have a whole grip of him, then gradually we, it's but natural that we have left the grip of, our grip over the religion that we were born in. To us it means nothing. Yeah.
It's like the shell.
It just drops.
It's dropped away.
It just drops.
The surface.
Without even knowing it, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But not wanting to drop it, but it gets shed without knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as we are cognizant of it, he wants us to be in it.
Mm-hmm. As long as it has meaning.
As long as it has meaning to you, then continue with it and give greater meaning to it, you would say. But invariably we have found this, then gradually it is shed. Without a knowing that it is totally shed now. But when it is shed and when we come to him, then our religion becomes quite different. People might ask, what's your religion? Then to us it was, at the time when he was present, our religion was obedience to him. There's no greater religion than that. To obey the Lord. And what is religion after all? Nothing but obedience to the injunctions that are there in the religion, the discipline that is there. So try to obey them. But why, in the process of obeying them, we find loopholes and excuses, you see. And that's why we start developing and expanding our religion.
Which
theology. It's called theology. So that's, he emphasized on the fact of obedience to a very, very great extent, to its ultimate limit. Where he even wanted us to slap him and spit upon him and have nothing to do with any personal regard. Obey. He took us to that degree. Obedience holds that importance. But then that doesn't mean that, there's a fine story that comes to my mind when I told you about Muhammad saying that. Simultaneously it came into my mind and it just goes on while I'm talking to you, it just goes on there. There's a nice little thing. I don't know whether you all know it. Of course, Peter was here when I told them. This was told to me by my cousin, Sam. You know Sam? So he is a great reader of Islamic traditions and all that. So he told me the story, and it's a beautiful thing. So Muhammad now is on his deathbed, you may call it. He's now about to, 31st January is coming close for him. So he's lying there, and there is the congregation of all his loved ones around him, in a very sad mood, because they will very soon miss him from the company, physically. They are all there. With great difficulty, Muhammad says, I forget the actual words, but Muhammad says, let us, what do you call, what's your colloquial term? You say, let us square, square up our accounts. What do you call it? What's colloquially said?
Even up.
Square, even up, yeah. So now my time has come, and maybe in some moments in your life with me, there are some scores to be taken account of, you see. Either I have to or you have to. But from my side, I have squared up. I am quit. From your end, there is something, then you please tell me, so that I am here now. The last breath is still there, so you may square up. Say, is there anybody here wanting to have anything? So there came up, you see, an Arab. You know, those Badr tribe people, you know. And nomadic?
Bedouins,
yeah. Nomadic tribe, Bedouin. So he comes up, he stands up, he says, yes, there's one thing. Says, what is it? So he goes on narrating the incident. You remember, you recall the great battle that we fought was of Badr, the great battle of Badr. Yeah. And you remember that you were all there, you see, in that spirit, and you had a whip with you. You were riding a horse. He's telling Muhammad now, and Muhammad is lying there now, hearing this. So he said, yeah, I recall that. It was a very spirited fight we had. It was a good battle. So he says, that time I was there by your side fighting, but I don't know why you switched your whip and I got a slash on my back. And I can't forget that still. So I had to have evens with you. He says, all right. So you want to strike me? He says, yes. You said now, you give us an opportunity, why not allow us? So he says, all right, get the whip. The whip was there because they used to ride on horses at the time. So he says, but you, so then poor Muhammad, you know, with great difficulty, there are two who lift him up on the bed. He's giving his back now to be whipped by this Bedouin. So he says, no, it is not like that. You will recall that my back was bare. I didn't have any clothes at the time. Oh, yeah. All right, then take my clothes off. Bare back, he wants to whip him. So, have you heard this story before? So, this is what happened. So, he says, yes. And these people, you know, they are great warriors around him, his own disciples. Fighters and persons who are so strong, like Ali, who was the lion, you see. He says, what is this man trying to do, this ordinary Bedouin here? Is he going to whip the Lord in this condition? No human being would ever dream of doing such a thing. He says, but he is all adamant, you know. And he says, so Muhammad gets out from his bed with great difficulty. So he stands up, he bears his back. People help him to bear his back. And then he says, give me the whip then, he says. So then he takes the whip and goes close to him. He says, I would like to find the exact spot where it was. So he goes there and then he throws the whip and puts his lips and kisses his back. He says, all throughout my life I had one desire to kiss you. But how can I fulfill my wish? You afforded the opportunity. See how it is. So he got the kiss, a Bedouin.
Can you explain why he had to go to those places?
Well, how is it possible for Bedouin to want to kiss his back? Where it is said that he had the seal of prophethood there at the back, you see. There is a mole or something like that. He wanted to kiss that particular. So how could he do it? If he were to go and say that, people would scoff him off, you see. What am I trying to do? Yeah. So the only way he could contrive is this. And the Lord allowed him the opportunity.
Now I remember among what I had heard among the sayings of Muhammad was that someone said, who are you? Really, Muhammad, who are you? and he answered, "I am Arab." And that, in that answer, when
see how he camouflaged himself. Yeah.
Which he was Arab,
yeah.
But Arab also meant
yeah.
what you said,
yeah.
Parvardigar, protector, mm,
yeah,
or
yeah.
God Almighty.
Mm. Mm.
So
well, they have
meaning.
To be yeah. They have to be very, very careful about their lives. Because they take that life, you see, to come in our midst to help us, comfort us. And they don't want to have any sort of short circuit there, you see, at the time. So it will blow up.
You know, Eric, it's...
Just as they take great precaution to veil their divinity, so also they take great precaution to continue with the veil.
Mm.
Mm. They put on. That is the man form. Yeah, what are you saying?
One of the peculiarities, perhaps, of the West, I think, is that that Muhammad is the least appreciated and least likely to be included amongst a lineage of avataric personages. Because the stereotype in the West of Muhammad is some barbaric character who, in the name of religion, led these wild jihad crusades. And I see, in talking about Baba in the concept of avatar, you know, Ram, Krishna, Buddha, Jesus, people are warming up to the idea. You've mentioned Muhammad, and people, what? Muhammad? And the aspect of the wars and battles and fighting are more closely associated with Muhammad than anything else. The Sufi tradition is under wraps for most and the like. I'm curious if Baba had ever said anything in relation to that aspect with Muhammad's.
Didn't a lot of that take place after his 31st January, done in his name, not so much by him?
I don't know.
Well, he had lots of battles.
Yeah, I know, but, you know, the spirit of Islam was
yeah,
after him.
It was after him. That is true, what you say is that. But even during his lifetime, there was a great battle of Badr that is always spoken of, you see, was there. It was so. This Arab story, just now we said,
yeah.
that you were in such a spirit at the time, you were fighting and going and you switch the whip on the back and all that. So, there is a nice little thing, you want to know this, it's a beautiful thing. This also was told to me by my cousin, who has studied the life. So the concept that we have of Muhammad is a sort of a barbaric person, you see, who without any discrimination must have committed a lot of, atrocities and other barbaric acts, you see. But see this story, hear this. One story that Baba told us was something which is always in my mind about how generous, how kind, and how truthful he is. So I'll begin with that first. And most of you all must be knowing that story, I don't know. It so happened that Muhammad was in his chair and all of them, surrounded by disciples, and all of a sudden there comes a woman in his presence dragging a teenager, you see. Very naughty child of hers. And she goes on ranting, you know, and complaining to the Lord, saying that only you can intervene and correct him. So Muhammad says, "What's the matter with the child? What is it?" She says, "I have come from such a long distance and I don't know how to correct him, and I love him very much, and he is the one who indiscriminately consumes dates, and you know, and dates
green
are yeah, green dates, and they are very harsh on the intestines, you see, if you take many of them at a time. So please tell him something." So Muhammad looked at the boy and simply told the woman, "Yes, you don't mind coming exactly after a month or so, come again." So she believed in the Lord. She says, at least she felt so happy that he has taken cognizance of the fact that there is going to be a hearing again after a month. So she leaves the Lord happily, satisfied that after a month she will be brought back. Now what had happened is that in the minds of the people around me, all this confusion. No, they know that she is such a poor woman. How is it possible for her to come after a month again? Who are you? Who are you?
Me?
Huh?
Oh, I'm Bill Klaus.
Oh, Bill, you are coming? When did you come? When did you come?
I got here last night.
All of a sudden I see a new face. I thought some the sun is giving me some sort of deception, you know, sun rays. So what happened is that Mandali people are thinking, why is he calling her after a month? She has to travel all the distance, go back and again come again and again go back. She's such a poor lady, and why all this? It's atrocious, as you call him to be an atrocious person. So in short is, well, the woman does come after a month. And again the same ranting is there, and again she produces the child and goes on complaining, you know. So Mama says, yeah, I recall you had come, you know. In his own inimitable way, he persuades the lad into submitting to a promise to him that he won't eat more than 4 dates a day at a time. Eventually, the lad agreed. He brought home to him the ill effects and everything was done. And the mother is very happy, the child is happy, says, will you not do this for my sake? Live to this promise that you have given. Says, I will, definitely, I won't eat more than 4 at any given time in a day. Good. So everybody was satisfied, they left. Then eventually these people, the disciples, they couldn't contain themselves. And they said, what's the matter? He could have said the same thing there a month ago, and why did he call him again? Why did he call them again? So then Muhammad let out the secret. See how truthful he is. He says, you know, when we have to guide people and we have to become the preceptors, we must act accordingly. But you know, my weakness for the dates, how weak I am. Whenever I see these dates, I cannot resist the temptation. I used to eat a lot. So I had to give up the dates at least for a month in order to be truthful to exhorting another person who is indulging in dates. So I desisted myself from indulging in dates for a month in order to give him the advice. This is what Baba told us, this story. From that day, the image of Muhammad, of course, was very high. Now, another story about his atrocities and all that. It so happened that what you say is right. There were people, you know, there were these Jews who used to come and pester those who had faith in Muhammad and all that a lot. And they used to create a great nuisance. And there were the the animosities between the people of Makkah and Medina. Eventually they had to just throw him out of the place, you see, and he went to Medina from Makkah. And he had to flee. In the process he broke his tooth and all that. And there when he went to Medina, it so happened that people, naturally they were at loggerheads. The subjects of Medina and the subjects of Makkah. So when they got the opportunity, you see, they welcomed Muhammad in trying to have a psychological effect. Well, they are the ones who would welcome him. So they can have an upper hand, you see. Because why? Just because Meccans had driven him out. So that's how it was. Well, that was. So each one vied with the other, wanting Muhammad to be his own guest in the house. Eventually there is a very fine little tale that Muhammad himself could not decide, you see, because there were 100 people wanting him to be their guest, you see, at one and the same time. How is it possible? So he eventually said, look here, I am overwhelmed by your welcome that you give me. But listen, how can I live in myself, all by myself? How can I live in at 100 places at one and the same time? You all come and press me like that. So we leave it to God. He used to do that. We leave it to God and listen to what he says to us. So I'll throw this rain, you see, off the camel. He had to flee from on camel back. So I'll throw the rain on the camel's neck, and wherever the camel goes and sits outside, I will then take it as word of God, God's hand guiding me to this house. All agree? He says, yes. So of course, he threw the rain, and the camel passed by that lane and again went away and again came back, and eventually it settled in front of one house. So there he got down and he became the guest for all time there. Then he lived there, and he used to give his discourses and dissertations, and everything continued there. Now what happened is that at one point these Makkians wouldn't want to keep quiet. They would always poke fun of the Medians and all that. Eventually it so happened that drove them nuts, you see. So the Median, Muhammad himself said, well, then fight out for righteousness. Do your duty, fight them out. Because they would molest the women folk, they would molest all people there, the weak and the old and all that. Mm-hmm. So let's have a battle. Never mind if we are few, it doesn't matter. Come on. So he himself went out in the battle and he fought the battle. And it is considered to be one of the biggest fights, wars. It is known as the war or battle, you may call it. We call it for our sake, to give you the enormity of the thing. It was an actual war. Mm. So his side won. How it won is another story. It was so. He won. Now, with that comes the booty. You know, in olden times, so naturally the women, the beautiful women, the young beautiful women were brought by the victorious from there. And so many camels, so many horses, all gold and jewelry and precious stones and everything was brought. And, well, they were very happy. It was the happiest day in the ministry of Muhammad after the end of the war of Badr. Now, they were very happy because of Muhammad the one. They knew it. They knew it for certain it was so. Because it was his encouragement, it was his guidance, it was his valor, it was him all the time. Now, they say to him, Muhammad, it's because of you we have won the war. We know we have our generals. The generals themselves would say that. They all said the same thing. So, we now know that you are the messenger of the Lord, and no better arbitrator can be there for you to dispense justice. You have to do with the booty. You should distribute the booty amongst us. Naturally, we are the victorious ones. So he says, you want me to be the arbitrator? Now this comes about his atrocity, how kind and loving and just he was. So you want me to be the arbitrator? He says, yes. We all want you to be. All right. So first thing that all you all should know is, God does not want us to molest women. On the contrary, he wants us to respect her. That is the word of God. So all the women should be respectfully led back to their places in Mecca. Agreed? So, well, yes, all that what you say is right. It was a disappointment, of course, but okay. Now, second point, all the camels that you have got, thousands of, we have got many camels over here. What will we do with the camels? You have to feed them for nothing at all. Why should you have the camels here? That which you do not have, you should have. That should be your duty. So send the camels back. That was another shock. Horses, same thing is there, horses are there. Send them back. By this time, you know, Yeah.